This guy has Trump derangement syndrome.
Not a complicated question.
Well, I guess it is for you. Have you apologized to President Trump, all of you who participated in those impeachment hearings against Donald Trump?
You indicted.
Excuse me, I'm going to answer the question.
Answer my question.
No, I'm going to answer the question the way I want to answer the question.
No, and I told you about that, Attorney General, before you started.
You don't tell me
anything. I did tell you because we saw what you did in the Senate.
You're a lawyer, not even a lawyer.
Arlen,
you don't get a reclaim time when you don't
quit. This is bigger than Watergate.
When I don't answer a question the way you want.
This goes over.
Hypocrite. Was over $50,000. I don't know why you're laughing. We should be talking about, what does a Dow have to do with anything? That's what they just asked. Are you kidding?
But we're going to move back to you.
I bet we are.
Yes, of course, because you're here to testify.
Well, she seems nice.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
Oh, brother.
I got the feeling that something ain't right. Scared in case I fall off my chair, and I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am from Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles. This is the broadcast as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA and on dozens of other fine affiliate stations on both the public airwaves and the internets around the country and the world, blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, an all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Good Lord, thank you for joining us again. Welcome to the broadcast. Our friends Digby and Driftglass are standing by to join us momentarily. Desi Doyen is, as always, right here. Hello, Desiree.
Hello.
She will also have our latest Green News report coming up a bit later on a very big day, a big, bad, and stupid one, frankly, as the Trump administration enacts the, and help me, tell me if I'm describing this right, the mother of all climate science denialism, as foretold by Project 2025. Yes, they have killed the EPA's 2009 endangerment finding that confirmed greenhouse gases are in fact air pollutants, which mandates that the EPA regulate them under the Clean Air Act. But of course, if the EPA unfinds that finding, as the corrupt fossil fuel-funded Trump administration has now done, it theoretically allows them to roll back all of the climate-related regulations that we have in this country to curb dangerous fossil fuel emissions, to which climate experts in the bargain are vowing a rigorous opposition in the courts. Is that just about sum it up?
That is an excellent summary.
Thank you. We covered it in the issue in detail yesterday with the Center for Biological Diversity's decades-long climate champion, Dan Becker. If you missed that show, you can, of course, grab it for free thanks to our listener donors. Anytime at bradblog.com. But while that is just another disaster for the nation, and in this case the world, as foretold by Project 2025, and while the unspeakable damage and pain and destruction caused by the Trump regime continues and will continue for some time, it is difficult to ignore the signs that we see everywhere now of an administration and a presidency that was supposed to be a political movement for the ages. Instead, it is falling apart before our eyes, barely 1 year out of the gate. Just by way of a few examples, 2 weeks ago in a special election in a deep red district won by Donald Trump in 2024 by 17 points, a Democratic candidate defeated his Republican opponent by 14 points to flip a state Senate seat deep in the heart of Trump country with a 31-point swing toward the Democrats since 2024. That was 2 weeks ago. Last week, a Democrat in a Louisiana state House district won that was won by Trump by 13 points back in 2024, defeated her Republican opponent in a state House race by double digits for a 37-point swing for the Democrats. And now, this week, on Tuesday, a Republican won a special election in a state House district in an exceptionally Trumpy area of Oklahoma this on Tuesday to represent Oklahoma House District 35. But the final results showed that the Democrats, well, they made very significant inroads in one of the nation's reddest states with a 30-point overperformance by the Democratic candidate as compared to Trump's win in the district in 2024. Democrats still lost, but they did 30 points better than they did just over 1 year ago in deep red Republican Oklahoma. That after Republicans were forced to outspend the Democrats by 4-1 to hold on to that seat. None of that is good news for Trump or his party, it seems to me, as the midterm elections near. On Thursday morning, a federal judge ruled that the Trump administration must facilitate the return to the U.S. of alleged Venezuelan gang members who were unlawfully deported to a maximum security torture prison in El Salvador last March after Donald Trump unlawfully invoked the centuries-old Alien Enemies Act to expel them from the U.S. unlawfully. Chief U.S. District Judge James Boasberg ordered the administration to pay for airfare and provide documents to facilitate travel for any of the 137 deported men who are currently outside Venezuela. That ruling came, as Judge Boasberg said in a stunning ruling, that while the court had, quote, offered the government the opportunity to propose steps that would facilitate hearings with the defendants remotely, he said, apparently not interested in this process. The government's response essentially told the court to pound sand, unquote. While it amounts to another legal loss in court for Trump's federal government, the judge did emphasize that any deportees who do choose to return would likely be taken into custody upon arrival, which will likely limit the number who take up that offer. So victory for the rule of law, which is good, but ongoing pain, nonetheless, for the victims of a vindictive, lawless, out-of-control administration. An administration, however, that is, thankfully, absolutely inept in their evil efforts. As you've likely heard earlier this week, a grand jury in D.C. refused to indict any of the six Democratic lawmakers, two U.S. senators, four House members, all veterans of armed forces or intelligence agencies who dared to remind active duty service members that they have a duty to refuse unlawful orders. It used to be wildly rare that grand juries would reject indictments brought to them by prosecutors, but it has become really just the course of business these days, it seems, for many of those grand juries, rejecting the administration's worst weaponization efforts to lash out against their perceived political foes. But the politicized attempt to indict six sitting Democratic members of Congress was not only rejected by the grand jury, but former Fox News host turned U.S. attorney Jeanine Pirro's case was unanimously rejected by grand jurors, according to NBC News Today. To secure an indictment, Pirro needed only the votes of 12 grand jurors out of the 16 to 23 that typically make up a grand jury. But apparently, she got zero. Zero grand jurors voted to play along with the effort. And on Thursday morning, a federal judge blocked, for now, the outrageous effort by former Fox News host turned Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth to demote retired U.S. Navy captain and astronaut turned U.S. Senator from Arizona Mark Kelly due to his participation in that completely lawful video. Another loss for the administration. And speaking of Congress, where Democrats are still blocking an annual funding bill for DHS, ICE, and the Customs and Border Protection Agency without putting in place serious guardrails to prevent the worst of the abuses by the Trump immigration secret police goons. Well, fallout continues from Wednesday's embarrassing appearance by screeching harpy slash Trump cultist slash U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi, whose refusal to answer any questions about the DOJ's unlawful cover-up of the legally mandated, required release of the Epstein files has even received blowback from now top MAGA influencers, some of whom are calling for her to step down after the disastrous performance before the U.S. House Judiciary Committee on Wednesday. A flurry of right-wing figures actually seemed to turn on Bondi after her wild meltdown in front of Congress when, according to the Daily Beast, Bondi spiraled in her seat, pointing and yelling at Democratic members, accusing them of Trump derangement syndrome, and refused to answer questions as Epstein's shocked victims watched from the gallery. The bizarre spectacle, they note, prompted condemnation across the board, including among a number of Trump supporters. A visibly stunned Republican Congressman Thomas Massie told reporters after the shouting match she didn't answer anything. She came here ready to talk about the Dow Jones and the NASDAQ, which seems kind of crazy to me. Conservative radio host Eric Erickson said Bondi, quote, should be fired or resign, before adding, quote, but neither will happen, which is another reason the Democrats are going to have a good election year this year, he said. Tim Pool, the prominent pro-Trump commentator and podcaster, during an episode of his Timcast, declared, quote, I was about to say that I think she's done a decent job, but I can't. It's just, I can't say it. He said, I think they've miserably handled the Epstein files. So, yes, the worms continue to turn, and they are turning today as well, it seems, in Minnesota, in what appears to be very good news, even if also accompanied by ongoing pain for far too many. As the Trump administration announces they plan to phase out all federal immigration agents in Minnesota. Hopefully, as the Minneapolis Star Tribune describes it, bringing an end in sight to what's been described as the largest immigration enforcement deployment in U.S. history. The immigration operations have upended the state. The administration first deployed agents to Minnesota back in December and sent more in January. The operations prompted protests and criticism in the aftermath of the fatal shooting by federal agents of Renee Good and Alex Pretty, both U.S. citizens who died in service of trying to help and protect their neighbors. Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, in a press conference on Thursday, said that, quote, over the past 6 weeks, the state of Minnesota and the people of this great state have endured an unprecedented invasion. We've been through natural disasters. We've been through COVID, he said, but this is something I don't think any state has ever experienced. They left us with deep damage, generational trauma, he said, of the federal operation. They left us with economic ruin in some cases.
No matter where you come from, we believe in those words. Give us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to be breathe free. This is a place you can breathe free. And my message to you is, the majority of Minnesotans and Americans stand on your side. They stand on the side that immigration is the core of who we are and that human decency. So as we go on this long road to recovery, it's going to be hard for many of you to get back the trust to be able to go out again without fear you're going to be asked for your papers, or to be singled out because of how you look. We in here in Minnesota have always made that clear, and I will attest that's why we were the target of this, because we are a successful multiracial, multicultural state that has one of the highest standards of living, that values our people and understands the people standing behind us are making that happen. So it's gonna be a long road, but I think you saw, and I'll say it again, Minnesotans are decent, caring, loving neighbors, and they're also some of the toughest damn people you'll ever find, and we're in this as long as it takes.
Democratic U.S. Senator from Minnesota, Amy Klobuchar, echoed those words in her own statement, noting correctly that, quote, Minnesotans stood together, stared down ICE, and never blinked. Our state has shown the world how to protect our democracy and take care of our neighbors. ICE withdrawing from Minnesota is just the beginning, she said. We need accountability for the lives lost and the extraordinary abuses of power at the hands of ICE agents, and we must see a complete overhaul of the agency. Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey struck an optimistic tone in a statement to the Star Tribune, saying, quote, "They thought they could break us, but a love for our neighbors and a resolve to endure can outlast any occupation. These patriots of Minneapolis are showing that it's not just about resistance. Standing with our neighbors is deeply American." That, even as Frey observed, that the occupation has been, quote, "catastrophic for our neighbors and businesses." And now, he said, it's time for a great comeback. Indeed, the people of Minneapolis and elsewhere across the state have offered, I think, a model for all of us as we celebrate Trump's goons supposedly leaving the Twin Cities region over the coming weeks, even as they no doubt will rear their ugly, masked, unlawful, un-American faces in other great American cities soon, where I think, I hope, at least, they will be similarly loathed and resisted. Just over 1 year into his second presidency, according to Axios, Donald Trump has become so politically toxic that voters now say Joe Biden, whose unpopularity forced him into early retirement, did a better job as president, according to not one, not two, but now three new polls. An ominous trend, observes crooks and liars Susie Madrick, for a president who's done everything he can to erase Joe Biden's positive legacy. She cites the three polls. Harvard Caps Harris found that 51% of registered voters say Trump is doing a worse job than Biden, compared with 49 who say he's doing better. The far right wing, very Trump friendly Rasmussen reports is fending off MAGA criticism today, notes Madrick, after finding that 48% of likely voters say Biden did a better job as president, compared with just 40% who chose Trump in the Rasmussen report. The reasonably centrist pollsters of YouGov Economist found that 46% of U.S. adults say Trump is doing a worse job than Joe Biden, compared with 40 who say he's doing better. In story after story today, Donald Trump and his administration seem to be falling apart. That does not mean they are finished with the extraordinary damage and pain they are causing, not by a long shot. In fact, the more that things fall apart for them, the more that Trump and his followers are likely to lash out in stupid and dangerous ways. But the more that they lash out in stupid ways, the more they also fail. And the more their coalition continues to fall apart as we head toward this year's critical midterm elections, when at least some legislative breaks may finally begin to be applied to what I hope, though I don't know for sure, is an ahistoric aberration in this country. Even as many of us still dwelling in the fact-based, reality-based community remained stunned to realize just how many bigoted, sexist, racist people that there are in this country and how many others are so easily fooled into going along with their corrupt anti-American program. Joining us now are our old longtime blogger friends, yes, from the reality-based community, the great Heather Digby Parton of Salon and Digby's Hullabaloo, and the no less great man known simply as Driftglass, co-host of the twice weekly Professional Left podcast. Welcome back to both of you guys.
Thank you, Brad.
Good to be here.
All right. We will talk about some specific stories in this week's news as time allows. But I kind of want to start with the broader picture to all of this at this point. Heather, I'll start with you, because after I compiled my opening segment there, I stopped by Salon to check out your column today, which comes from a slightly different news hook, but it kind of seems to end in a very similar place as my monologue there, I guess, somewhat hopeful. I know that some are not nearly as sanguine about all of this as I think I feel today, and we'll talk a little bit more about it, but You seem to come to a similar conclusion in your piece headlined, "This isn't Trump's golden age, it's ours," arguing that there is reason for hope right now. Really? How so, as you see it?
Well, it just seems to me that, you know, all of the things that you say, it's overwhelming. And any of those of you in the audience who are paying close attention know how overwhelming it is. And everybody here in this program knows how overwhelming it is. But at the same time, you know, I do see, and I'm frankly kind of surprised. I mean, just you can start off with the polling and see that everybody feels pessimistic and that, you know, that you've got all this, you know, tremendous angst over what's going on and people are saying it. I just saw a new poll today about how young men who voted in rather large numbers for Donald Trump have all gone in the opposite direction, and right, they're very upset about the economy and mm-hmm. about immigration and all of this stuff. People are aware, and I think that this is good. People have awakened to what's going on. But when you look at what's happened in Minneapolis and in other cities around the country, you see that people aren't just taking this lying down. I was mostly, you know, sort of shocked over the weekend to see that these Olympic athletes over in Milan mm-hmm. were just, you know, the stuff they were saying. And of course, the right wing went crazy when they heard them saying anything other than all hail Donald Trump. But what they were saying was, you know, I'm not here to, support everything that's going on in my country. I believe in love, not hate. I believe in unity and diversity and all that stuff. It was very kind of anodyne, kind of all American statements, things that people used to think were just common sense, you know, common decency. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the Bad Bunny thing that happened at the yeah. Super Bowl. Similarly, you know, people really liked it. And his message was that it was unity. And yes, he spoke in Spanish. But geez, something like 50 million people in America speak Spanish. Half the world speaks Spanish. You know, it's second only to Mandarin, to, you know, Chinese language, right, as far as how many people speak it. So all this kind of inclusivity and this idea of neighbors coming out for neighbors, you listen to Tim Walz and his message, which is that, you know, we're tough, but we care. And you know, and my ending after I went through all of that and was looking at all this stuff that was happening, coming from the people up, I'm going, well, you know, Trump likes to talk about a golden age. It's his favorite thing and how he's, you know, slapping gold all over everything to sort of manifest it. The truth is that it's possible that what this has done is awaken the American public
yes.
to its own ideals, its own values. And maybe at the end of the day, I mean, I hate to sound Pollyanna-ish here, but maybe somehow or another, it's going to end up being the catalyst
yep.
for a different kind of golden age, not the kind that he's talking about, but the kind that we've all been, you know, craving for many, many years. So that's where I came out. I mean,
It was actually very similar to where I came out, as you can tell. I mean, it's not to say that things are wonderful, but all of the pieces are there, you know, showing not only him losing in his project, in his overall project in every way, shape, and form, but people understanding that what his project is a bad one. It's things that people don't like. That said, Driftglass, I've got a friend that I've been going back and forth with via email for some time who was very troubled, understandably, by the argument that Trump and his administration and his MAGA coalition is falling apart. Earlier this week, I posted a show to bradblog.com with the headline, quote, "Trump's presidency now about little more than racism, corruption, culture war nonsense," to which my friend replied that a more accurate headline would have been, quote, "Trump regime about little more than self-enrichment, ethnic cleansing of the U.S., destroying government, destroying international order to the benefit of Russia, exercising raw power so as to permanently entrench the GOP, and transferring wealth to the already rich," which is hard to disagree with, if a bit ungainly for a headline, but he argues that we are now living in a dictatorship and that the arguments about Trump failing, et cetera, are at best premature. They're simply not borne out by what is actually going on right now. You got any thoughts on that? And feel free to take his side on that, as that would probably make better radio anyway. So,
well, can I agree with both of you?
Oh, that, well, that's an easy way out, isn't it?
I'm all about this. I'm a centrist. Yes, I'm a, you know, I believe in them. I'm an independent,
you're,
Brad.
You're both sidesing it, are you?
Okay. Hell yeah.
Okay.
No, I think there's a lot of merit to say that today, as of this minute, your friend is correct. All of those incredibly damaging things are happening. The Trump administration is now just reduced to looting the place as fast as they can and lying about it. On the other hand, if you're winning or you're confident, you're not rolling troops into states and trying to disrupt their elections. Mm-hmm. And you're not sending a shrieking moron to Congress with a burn book to insult Democrats. You only do that to make sure that your tiny, bigoted, idiot base stays on side, because you're down to 38%, 40%, whatever it is. And, you know, there's a great, throughout all of human history, we want to be able to see the future. We want to be able to predict the future. And, of course, we can't. But what we can do, the best we've got, are our gut instinct about what losing looks like and the poll numbers that Digby talked about, including the ones about young men. If you're losing that many supporters and that much oomph among that many people, the future doesn't look good for you. And the minute Democrats have any hand on any lever of power anywhere, things are going to get very, very bad for the Trump administration, because then they can hold hearings and they can subpoena people. I mean, you know, Comer talking about dragging Bill Clinton in front of his stupid committee, which would be hilarious. I would love to see Bill and Hillary just dance circles around this idiot. That sets the precedent that you get to subpoena presidents and former presidents and force them to sit in front of a hearing in public and answer questions, which is not going to make Donald Trump very happy, because that means it applies to him too.
Right.
So I'm waiting for the midterms. I'm looking at all the data I can. I'm looking at all those midterm elections. I'm looking at how my own congressperson, Nikki Baczynski, is running this time. 4 years ago, she ran as a farm bill, sensible gun legislation, let's get her done, purple state Democrat. Now she's running on impeach Kristi Noem and slap some, you know, mandatory recusal for the Supreme Court and get rid of Citizens United. That and so I'm relying on the political instincts of people who are actually running for office to tell me through their actions what they see among their voters. And I know this: Democratic primary voters in this little flyover area of ours that nobody pays attention to won't tolerate anything less than her doing that. And that tells me that one side is fired up and looking for big wins, and the other side feels dispirited and awful. And Trump is giving them nothing. He's giving them nothing to hang their hopes on, nothing to hope for. He's just wrecking it, and his people don't know how to do anything other than be awful.
Well, and
the rest of people are winning.
And why aren't they responding to that? Why are Republicans in Congress still seemingly so out of step with the country? I mean, are they that afraid of Donald Trump? In other words, you know, most do not seem at least to be running scared of what even the Rasmussen poll, for cripe's sake, seems to be trying to tell them. Don't they realize they are headed for ruin here? Do they have something else up their sleeve? Or do you expect that any of that is going to change between now and November as they start to realize they're in big trouble, which I don't know why they don't realize that already?
Well, I think I've mentioned this on this program before. This reminds me of the Tom DeLay era, when a lunatic, right-wing, dangerous man had control over the genitalia, if you will, of the Republican Party. And they were terrified, because they, if you jump too soon, he'd kill you. If you jump too late, you're doomed. And that's where they are right now. They dare not cross Trump. They dare not cross any of the people that can hurt them. But on the other hand, they are very clearly understand that if they don't do something, if they don't pick some fight somewhere, if they don't distinguish themselves from him somehow, they're going to win all the, you know, R plus million districts out there. But the rest of them are in trouble. And then they're in the minority. And then there's nothing for them. So I think they're just sweating this out, going, you know, I think there's an awful lot of physical threats out there too. I think there are people who are terrified that if they cross him, someone's going to come to their door in the dark of night and threaten them or threaten their family. And you just hear that kind of terror in their voices when they talk about how wonderful Trump is and how great everything is.
At least until after the primaries.
Yeah, I think that the assassination of Minnesota lawmaker Melissa Hortman had a very, very scary effect for many of them, but they won't talk about it and they won't do anything until they're safe and free after the primaries.
Could I just add one thing too? Yeah. There are a number of them, I don't know how many of them, who are also rank craven opportunists.
Yes.
Who are making a lot of money. There's all kinds of, I mean, the amount of corruption going on in the Republican Party and in the administration is absolutely astonishing. And I think so, plenty of them are just saying, hey, I just got to hang in here, got to do what I need to do, got to ride the, ride the wave here and make my money and get out. Mm. And that I think that there are quite a few of them who are on that road and think that they can come out of this ahead financially, if nothing else.
By staying on the train, even if they have to take it over the cliff, essentially.
Yeah, well, they'll have their money in the bank when that happens. They'll be all right.
And there's always wingnut welfare waiting for you if you don't cross the Donald Trump, who's controlling that welfare these days. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back and talk about, the Epstein files. I understand that's a thing lately.
I've heard of them, yeah.
What? Yeah, tell me more.
And something. No, I'm hoping you'll tell me more. That and some other stuff, probably, as time allows. Right here on the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't touch that dial.
The broadcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Welcome back. It's the Bradcast, Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. We are here with, of course, our special guests, Heather Digby Parton and the great Driftglass, trying to make sense of it all the day or so after. What's her name? Attorney General Pam Bondi. Kind of crazy what happened there in the U.S. House Judiciary Committee on Wednesday as she refused to answer pretty much anything at all regarding the Epstein files and the administration's cover-up of their legally mandated release. Guys, we don't talk a lot about the Epstein affair on this program very much. Figuring everyone else in the world is talking about it, and so much is happening and moving so quickly. So I do welcome your thoughts here. Let me start with Digby. What have you learned that you didn't previously know or fully understand or appreciate about the Jeffrey Epstein case, either from the material that's been disclosed in the files or from the way that the administration has handled their release and the obvious the cover-up there? What have you learned?
Well, I have learned that the idea of this elite group of pedophiles that the right has been peddling all these years, there was more than a little element of truth in it. And the fact that all these people, it was different than what they said, of course. I mean, I'm not endorsing QAnon or anything. But what we've seen in this release is just this endless, endless list of elite people in our society across the board that were affiliated with this guy and that knew him and that were in touch with him and were hanging out with him and with each other. I mean, this is, I've never been invited to that party. I don't know about you. Thank God. Not that I would go.
No comment.
But,
Yeah.
Okay. But, this is really astonishing to me. But if I could just say one thing about the hearing that we heard was Pam Bondi, who truly is a shrieking harpy, is really mild. that you use.
I was being nice. I was being generous.
You're being very polite. You're like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, she's really a reprehensible human being. And the worst moment for her, to me, and there were many of them. Well, first of all, she called Jamie Raskin, a constitutional scholar who went to Harvard, a washed up lawyer.
Yes.
And she, you know, and she went to Stetson University of Law, just FYI.
Stetson University?
Stetson University of Law. That's where she went. Raskin, of course, went to Harvard and was a constitutional law professor, but he's a washed-up lawyer. But the worst thing she did was when asked if she would, you know, turn around and apologize to the survivors, mm-hmm. the Epstein survivors, who were seated behind her, quietly observing the whole thing. She would turn around and apologize for what they had been through and what they were going through. It would have been the easiest thing in the world for her to do that, to just go, yes, of course, and turn around and go, I'm very, you know, very sorry for everything you went through. We're doing our best to try and, you know, deal with it. And, you know, we thank you for your, you know, your perseverance, et cetera, et cetera. Anybody could have done that. And it wouldn't have had any effect on all the lies and everything they've told. She couldn't do it. She said she refused to turn around and look at them. And instead, she said, to the person who was questioning her, which was Pramila Jayapal, said, I refuse to get down in the gutter with your theatrics.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was absolutely gross. I mean, got down in the gutter with a call for her to apologize. I mean, this woman is absolutely grotesque. And she's a perfect reflection of what this administration has done with the Epstein files and the way they're treating it and the way that they are absolutely day after day after day. And it's not going to go away. It's with them, whether they like it or not. And it's because of the way they are behaving. If they would act even halfway decently about this, even with a slight modicum of maturity and professionalism about it, instead of ranting like a bunch of weirdos all the time, I think that they would do a lot better. Instead, this is every single day, you just are more and more convinced, first of all, that Donald Trump was in it up to his neck, obviously, or they wouldn't be covering it up like this. And, you know, the rest of these people are horrible. Look at Howard Lutnick.
And
I mean,
the fact that I still don't understand. I mean, I don't feel like I've learned all that much that I didn't sort of appreciate before we knew this was going on. The only thing that I'm still confused about is how the folks on the right didn't understand that the guy who appears in all of the videos with Jeffrey Epstein would be all over this. I mean, they were thinking
they're not very bright.
We're gonna catch Bill Clinton or something. But Jesus Christ, the guy who's, you know, in all the videos is Donald Trump. What did they think they would find here? Driftglass, your thoughts on what you have learned so far from the Epstein matter, which means you can take that question anywhere you like.
I learned that Pam Bondi will not stand by and listen to you badmouth the United States of America.
That's true. I apologize. I'm so sorry.
Gentlemen.
Yes.
And then march out. Yes. I learned nothing new about the status of the files other than the Republican, what it says about the Republican Party mm-hmm. and Donald Trump, that they really thought this was just one more grift that would get them votes.
Mm-hmm.
This is just one more thing we can promise people and then forget about because we'll have the votes. And they found out that this is not just another grift, that there is no off switch on this thing. Mm. And the we call Republicans over at the professional level, we call them reprogrammable meatbags because they are. Because you can tell them one thing on a Monday and they'll believe it and repeat it on Tuesday. And on Wednesday, tell them the opposite and they'll say it and believe it. You can't reason with people like that. But this thing, this is different. There is no off switch on this thing. And the more, and we are learning how really bad they are at covering things up. They do not know. Panic, sweaty, screaming doesn't tell me that you have nothing to hide. And trying to drag people in front of a hearing. I mean, threatening to put, again, Bill Clinton and Hillary in front of microphones. Are you insane?
Yeah.
Do you know how much better they are at this than you will ever be? And so they have nothing, and they're just throwing stuff at the wall, trying to distract people from this horrible thing that's getting worse and worse by the day. And they can't.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, this is. I was going to say this is Khan at the end of Star Trek II. You know, no, you can't run away. You know, there's no way to get away from this. And the whole party is lashed to this thing. There's not one Republican. Well, Thomas Massie. But other than him and maybe a couple of others, they're all lashed to this horrible thing that is Donald Trump's kryptonite. Mm. And there's no way to get away from it because they made all these promises. And they said they've already read the files. And they've already, Cash Patel's already lied under oath in front of Congress. There's no way to back out of this gracefully or otherwise. So they're screaming and pounding the desk, hoping to intimidate a bunch of Democrats who think they're going to sweep to power in a few months. And that's just never going to work. So it tells me nothing about the Epstein files other than it was a horrendous thing. And yes, there really was a cabal of wealthy pedophiles and pedophile adjacent people. And that most of them were hooked in with Donald Trump.
Yeah, exactly. I see Heather mentioned the performance of Bad Bunny at the Super Bowl, which I think, pardon the pun, is a bit of a turning point for a lot of people who are saying, you know, what the hell are we doing? These people are just, you know, they're Americans. They're just trying to live their best lives like all of us. I think that will prove to be, a turning point moment for the nation and for this entire long story. But I think similarly true, Pam Bondi's insane performance in defense of the DOJ and really her boss defending really the indefensible here. I think all of this, you know, maybe it's just this week that will become that turning point. But I'm wondering, is it going to what happens moving forward? And I want to get to a couple of other points. Digby, is that story growing? Is it flagging? Is it sort of becoming a regular hum that you stop noticing? Is it just going to be with us for the rest of this administration?
You mean Epstein?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's with us for the rest of the administration. This is going to be one of the, you know, it's got every administration has its thing, right, that it's remembered for. And I really think that at the end of the day, this one is going to be central to it, even though there's all this other stuff going on at the same time. But this is very central to the thing, because what it is and what we're seeing with Donald Trump is just this decadent elite that exists. He's one of them. His very election is a manifestation of it. Mm. And I think that, you know, part of, we were talking earlier about the resistance and the resilience of the American people kind of standing up and going, wait a minute, you know. And I think that that's what at heart and you know, it's central to that resistance is a recognition of this decadent elite that exists out there. And Epstein, Trump, all of it, you know, the stuff that Access Hollywood and, you know, E. Jean Carroll and the fraud and the corruption and all of that is part of this. And that is what he's going to be remembered for. And I think it's going to go all the way through to the end of his term. And Republicans are going to have to answer for it because they are the ones who have absolutely not just enabled it, they've encouraged it. This is the culmination of their decades long project. Thanks a lot. Great. Good work, guys.
Yeah, it's going nicely. Driftglass, and again, we're going to have to do this quickly, but the DOJ this week was forced to reveal the ridiculous, long ago debunked premises for raiding the Fulton County Elections Warehouse outside of Atlanta to obtain the ballots from the 2020 election. That comes on the heels of Trump's, I would say, empty threats to so-called nationalize our elections, which is not really a thing. I know that a lot of folks are very freaked out about all of this. I must say I am not. I think he's got no legal or constitutional power to do any of what he is talking about, threatening to do. Yes, he could put ICE on the streets to scare people into not coming out to vote. But frankly, I don't think that will work either. In fact, I think it'll have the opposite effect and enrage so many folks that they will fight like hell to cast their vote. Am I, once again, being too sanguine about all of this when it comes to the election this year?
I am reminded of the little stickers they used to put on albums saying parental warning, which always boosted album sales.
True.
Yes.
The protests against The Life of Brian drove people to go see The Life of Brian. If you tell Americans, broadly speaking, that you can't do a thing or we're going to prevent you from doing a thing that you think you should be able to do, guaranteed you're begging for trouble.
Yep.
But, you know, in America, legitimacy is granted by the majority. If you win the majority, then you're legitimate. And the entire Republican project for my entire life has been delegitimizing Democrats from Gingrich and, you know, and Clinton, and Barack Obama's not an American, and so forth. And losing the 2020 election is a big hole in the Republican argument that they are the ascendant party. They're the legitimate party, Democrats are not. So that's why they're all on board now with this gigantic, stupid lie that's been debunked a million times, that you lost, guys. You just lost. That's the facts. And because they have a lunatic man whose brain is melting running their party, he can't let it go. This is ego to him. He cannot let this go. And like Epstein, he's dragging everybody else behind him. Because if you want, you want a job in this administration, you damn well better sound off the 2020 election was rigged and Donald Trump really ran, won, which is going to come back to haunt you a million times over once he's gone.
Has Digby, has any of that alarmed you over the past week or two? The raid at Fulton County, the vow to nationalize the election. Your thoughts on that real quick.
Well, it's alarming. I mean, of course, anytime you see the federal government decide to send in the, you know, the FBI to do something like that, you have to be alarmed just at the sheer abuse of power that's happening. And that, you know, the fact that the norms and the guardrails and all of that are, you know, once again being you know, torn down. But on the other hand, I agree with you. I don't think that particular thing, the thing with the ballots there is, that's to salve Trump's ego, I think, more than anything else.
Yeah.
It's also alarming that the FBI is salving the president's ego, but I think that's what it's for. I mean, I don't doubt that there's going to be contesting the election in some form or another. They've got, you know, they're prepared to do that. I'm sure they've got some crazy stuff going on. Sidney Powell is back in the picture. You know, she was there. You know, I mean, you've got some nuts running around, you know, that are probably going to do some things. But I don't think that they're going to have the capacity to do it. And frankly, I mean, maybe, you know, I could really hate myself next November if I'm saying this and I'm wrong.
Yeah.
But I think there's going to be a massive turnout. And I think that that's something that that all of their gamesmanship is not going to be able to overcome.
Don't worry. We will hate you for it, for that. So don't worry.
I already regret saying it. Oh my God.
No,
I'm
knocking
on wood all over the place.
No, yes, from your mouth to God's ears.
You're absolutely right. I think there's going to be a turnout like we've never seen before. I got about 30 seconds for each of you here. The State of the Union address, God save us all, is, I know, it's in about 2 weeks. Hopefully you will both be on with us the day after. I can't
that
go through.
That means we have to watch it, I guess.
Yes, you do.
Oh, sorry. Thanks a lot.
I'm not going through that torture alone. So I'm wondering, any sense of what this is going to be? I mean, it's traditionally, you know, a moment where a president sees their approval ratings get a bump because they say some inspiring, wonderful things in a normal fashion.
No.
Do you suppose that's going to happen? Do you have any advice on what Trump maybe should think about before the State of the Union 2 weeks from now? Heather, you're first. Good luck.
All right, I'm first. I'll just say I'm predicting that we're going to hear that it's the greatest economy the world has ever known, that the country is doing better than it's ever done. It is a golden age. Nothing has ever been better. He's building the ballroom. He's building the arch. He's putting gold all over everything. That's what I predict. Gee, what do you think's going to happen? Am I right?
Gonna be a home run. Actually, before I get to Drift,
quick. I think that Trump has a lazy Susan of nutty grievances, and we will probably see him put them all on repeat over and over and over again. Okay,
that would be fun. Drift Glass.
Well, it's theater of the mind here. It's like I'm there. It's very exciting.
Yes.
I look forward to the completely empty Democratic side of the House, except for John Fetterman standing there doing that slow Orson Welles clap every time Trump opens his mouth.
What do you mean empty? They're not going to show up?
That's my the visualization. Thinking, yeah. There's just going to be one Democrat applauding. One Democrat applauding. It's going to be John Fetterman, and he's going to be there just very, very excited. And I hope they don't. I really hope they just say forget it, this, and have their own separate thing elsewhere, because there is no point in this, and no point in giving this lunatic another microphone and trying to outshout someone who's got the podium.
And
so,
Heather, you said you heard they're talking about boycotting?
I did. I read something that they're talking about boycotting. They're trying to keep anybody from, you know, doing an Al Green thing or a Marjorie Taylor Greene thing. and shouting at Trump. And so there's some discussion of whether or not they should do that or whether or not they should just boycott the thing altogether. I'm for the boycott. Yeah. I think have half the chamber empty would be great.
Well, now I am looking forward to the State of the Union address. Heather Digby Parton.
Well, don't get your hopes up.
Her work can be seen at Salon.com and Digby'sblog.net. You can follow her on Blue Sky at Digby56. You can find Driftglass twice a week at proleftpod.com, where he hosts the Professional Left podcast with his delightful wife, Fran, from the Cornfield Resistance of Flyover Country, Illinois. You can find him on the Blue Skies also at Simply Driftglass. All right, guys, we'll see you in a couple weeks. Thanks for everything.
Thank you, man.
Thank you.
All right, quick break, and we're back with Desi Doyen and our very stupid Green News Report. That's straight ahead on the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Hey, this is Brad. Please consider supporting whichever progressive media outlet is serving you. Most, just like us, do not receive corporate or political support. We all need your support to counter the powerful corporate media echo chamber. From Desi Doyen and myself, thank you. All right, Desi Doyen, the world will be melting indeed now.
Yes, sadly.
As discussed in our latest Green News Report.
This will be the largest deregulatory action in American history.
Trump EPA repeals landmark endangerment finding, the foundation for all U.S. climate regulations. Trump orders Defense Department to use more dirty coal subsidized by taxpayers. Plus,
and let's not forget, Canada paid for the construction of the bridge. The U.S. didn't want to pay. Canada said, we think it's important. We're going to pay for it. We're going to fund it to help facilitate international trade.
Trump threatens to block new bridge between Michigan and Canada.
All of that idiocy and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
We are doubling down on stupid.
Well, that's what we do, Governor. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, you heard Gavin Newsom there talking about doubling down on stupid. He was talking about overturning the endangerment finding. I can't think of anything stupider than that.
There probably isn't anything stupider than that.
Well, he's got 3 more years in office, so we'll see.
Yep. In a major victory for the fossil fuel industry, the Trump Environmental Protection Agency on Thursday revoked the landmark endangerment finding, the scientific determination that greenhouse gas emissions released by the burning of oil, gas, and coal endanger public health by causing destructive climate change. The endangerment finding was triggered by a 2007 Supreme Court ruling that found if the EPA determines that climate warming emissions threaten human health, then it must regulate them under the Clean Air Act. It forms the legal basis underpinning major U.S. climate pollution rules, and repealing it demolishes the EPA's authority to regulate emissions from tailpipes, smokestacks, power plants, and industrial sites. It could also be used to block future presidential administrations from regulating planet warming emissions. Even as the science of man-made climate change has become even more robust and deadly, costly extreme weather disasters are becoming more frequent and intense. On the broadcast, Dan Becker of the Center for Biological Diversity said revoking the endangerment finding and pollution rules means consumers will pay more for energy, and it will hold back U.S. innovation and global competitiveness and harm public health.
They're tearing up the facts and trying to advance the interests of their cronies in the oil and gas and auto industry over those of the American people. This is going to make kids sicker because there will be more air pollution. People with lung disease will suffer and some will die. People with heart disease will also have increased early deaths. So this is bad for people. It's good for China.
It's good for China because China is betting on a low-carbon future. As the U.S. retreats, American automakers are losing global market share as the world shifts to electric vehicles. China dominates global exports of clean energy tech, and a new analysis out this week shows that China is also reaping the economic benefits at home. Carbon Brief reports that clean energy and electric vehicle sectors made up more than a third of China's GDP growth last year.
I've changed my mind. Gavin Newsom was wrong. We are instead tripling down on stupid.
On Wednesday, the Trump administration also moved immediately to increase air pollution with an executive order directing the U.S. Department of Defense to buy its electricity from more costly coal-fired power plants subsidized by taxpayers. At a signing event, Trump also received the first ever Undisputed Champion of Coal Award from a coal trade organization.
Well, that sounds legit.
The impacts of climate change are still accelerating. The U.S. West is now in one of its warmest winters on record, with temperatures as much as 35 degrees Fahrenheit higher than normal in some places, causing record low snow cover and raising wildfire and drought risks. According to a new analysis from Climate Central, human-caused climate change made the winter's heat at least three times more likely to occur. Finally, in stupid news.
You mean we haven't had the stupid news yet?
Donald Trump threatened to block the opening of the new, nearly complete Gordie Howe Bridge linking Detroit, Michigan and Windsor, Canada. Canada paid the entire cost of building the bridge. Toll revenue will be split with Michigan. Trump's effort to extort new concessions from Canada came just hours after the billionaire owner of a rival bridge, also a Trump donor, asked Trump to block the new bridge because it interferes with his monopoly control over the crossing.
And he was happy to comply. I'm starting to think that Donald Trump guy might be corrupt. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, because we had so much stupid, you can check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on social medias, especially Blue Sky at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your stupid Green News Report.
Everything is stupid. Everything is stupid.
Yes, it is. Thank you very much.
Both deaf.
Desi Doyen, our producer. Thanks as well to our guests today, Heather Digby Parton and Driftglass. And, of course, to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program or any other, you can download them all for free at bradblog.com. But do consider hitting one of those donate buttons when you stop by, or you can go straight to bradblog.com/donate. Help us stay on your public airwaves, stupid or not. Drop me email if you like. I am bradcast@bradblog.com, and on the social medias, especially Blue Sky, I am the Brad Blog. See you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
Everything is stupid.